It's Friday, September 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, and welcome. Coming up, China shows off modern military hardware. Some European migrants are escorted to camps.
Maintaining a healthy body mass index, even as early as in midlife, may have long-lasting protective effects in delaying the onset of Alzheimer's disease.
New studies suggest there are more reasons to watch your weight. And we look back on the early days of hip-hop. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. China put on a massive military parade to mark the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II in Beijing, an event that was shunned by most Western leaders, including President Obama. More than 12,000 soldiers took part in that, included a display of new weaponry, such as the Dongfeng 21D anti-ship ballistic missile said to be capable of destroying an aircraft carrier. VOA correspondent Bill Ide in the Chinese capital told VOA's Victor Beatty, beyond the history of the moment, the parade seemed designed to stoke nationalistic pride among the Chinese people.
The government has been focusing on how this is about remembering history, promoting the importance of peace, but at the same time, it's a rally cry for the nation, and China is trying to promote nationalism at a time when things are becoming very difficult for the country. Its economy is slowing, and there are a lot more challenges now that China is facing, and it does appear that part of this is a distraction of sorts from those problems.
The People's Liberation Army, which of course is the Chinese armed forces, are going to be cut by 300,000, that announcement made by the president. Is this just an empty gesture given the changing strategy of the PLA from these mass attacks to more high-tech equipment that requires a smaller army?
Well, certainly when you look at the numbers at 2.3 million strong, if you take 300,000 from that, we're still at 2 million. So it's still a huge army. What some feel that this signifies is that reforms are going ahead. The military is going to push ahead with reforms.
Bill, there were a lot of world leaders on hand today, a Russian President Putin among them, but most Western leaders rebuffed invitations to attend. Why was that so?
It seems that there is something about the message that this parade was sending that kept other leaders away. At the same time, it's promoting peace. From China's perspective, it's also raising a lot of concerns, and I don't think they want to be associated with that. A lot of countries in the region are watching very closely this parade, and I think in the days to come, we may get some reactions about what they saw and how they feel China was portraying itself and its rising role in the region and the world.
Recent U.S. media reports also suggest Chinese leaders may be resorting to international tensions and the use of nationalism to deflect attention from the country's domestic troubles. The RAND Corporation's Scott Harold said Thursday's parade appeared to, in part, reflect a message that China was sending to its neighbors and the United States.
The parade, insofar as it demonstrated all this hardware, really allowed China to highlight some of its integrated strategic deterrent capabilities. Additionally, it has sought to put on notice regional countries as well as the United States that China has the capacity to reach out and cause problems for neighboring countries if they cross China's interests. And then at a time when Xi Jinping has launched an anti-corruption drive that has caught up members of the People's Liberation Army, members of the Ministry of State Security, members of the intelligence community, that has purged elements of the state-owned enterprise system, that has touched the academy in China, that has touched on think tanks and the media, including China Central Television. At a time when all of those things happened, this parade really served to put his own stamp on the military, which is the ultimate guarantor of the Chinese Communist Party's power. And in associating himself ever more closely with the military, particularly as an instrument, he has been able to essentially guard his left flank against the possibility that any adversary within their system could paint him as less nationalistic or less patriotic than them and thereby mount a comeback.
What do you make of these articles about rising nationalism in China and the fact that the economy is weakening right now could raise the prospect of some sort of confrontation in the region or with the United States?
This is a theory that in political science is known as diversionary war theory, the notion that at a time when you're facing domestic crises, you might seek to gin up a foreign crisis to get a rally around the flag effect. To date, China has been very cautious about and strategic in its use of foreign crises. It has sought to get the rally around the flag effect without having to actually fight any rival states. I think given the challenges that China faces, it makes sense for China to try to divide its adversaries and intimidate them into giving it what it wants without having to fight for what it wants.
Hours before the parade kicked off in Beijing, the U.S. Navy confirmed the presence of 5 Chinese warships in international waters of the Bering Sea near Alaska. That's where President Obama happened to be making a 3-day visit. Harold says the vessels had completed joint exercises with Russia's. China's defense ministry referred to it as routine and not aimed at any country. President Xi Jinping, by the way, is to make his first state visit to Washington later this month. Well, it's time for us to check out reactions on Twitter and, of course, today about the military parade. As always, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to give us the latest buzz. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. The biggest news coming out of the military parade is, of course, Beijing's cutting down of its troops. The Los Angeles Times at LA Times on Twitter sent out this tweet 2 hours ago. At military parade, Chinese president says nation will cut 300,000 troops, a gesture of peace.
Well, what about from the Chinese media? Have they been tweeting?
Oh, absolutely. China state-run Xinhua News Agency at XH News on Twitter wrote this tweet. Global reactions to Xi's speech at hashtag V-Day commemoration and shared a link to an article. The article said the international community positively echoed Chinese President Xi Jinping's speech and quoted a former Mexican president, an Indian analyst, and a Kenyan official. Russia state-run television RT also tweeted about the parade by sharing panorama videos of the event. Both of the media outlets used hashtag V-Day, but it doesn't stand for Valentine's Day. It stands for Victory Day.
Well, they might love it. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference between those two, of course, G, and it's no secret China's relationship with its neighbors have been changing quite rapidly. Any tweets on that?
Oh, absolutely. Let's focus on North and South Korea. The RAND Corporation tweeted, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's absence from Thursday's military parade in China reflects weakening ties between Beijing and Pyongyang. RAND is a nonprofit think tank based in California. On the other hand, Jim, Beijing's relationship with Seoul has been strengthening recently, something Washington officials are watching very closely. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency tweeted a link to an analytical piece and wrote, experts play down concerns over South Korean President Park Geun-hye's attendance at China parade. When the South Korean presidential office of Cheonghwa-dae announced Park's decision to attend the event, it cited China's potential contribution to the Korean reunification and the Korean independence fighters' movement against the Japanese colonial rule in China. Jim?
Well, we're glad you could join us for our parade of tweets today. Thank you for that analysis, G. Abby Lee. And you can find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. Migrants trying to reach Western Europe refused to leave a railway train that was headed to a detention camp Thursday and then scuffled with Hungarian police trying to remove them. The police halted a crowded train heading for the Austrian border and ordered all refugees aboard to leave and go to a nearby migrants' reception center. Many of the families on the train said they were fleeing the civil war in Syria, trying to reach a safe haven in Europe. The police order to leave the train was unintelligible to many of the refugee families, according to witnesses, and some of the migrants climbed down onto the railway tracks and put their bodies in the train's path while others tried to flee on foot. Stephen Ryan, spokesperson for the International Federation of the Red Cross in Budapest, tells VOA's Jeffrey Young that NGOs and others are struggling to address the refugees' many needs, such as food and sanitation.
The situation that we're seeing here in Budapest is something that nobody would have expected to see in Europe in the year 2015. Thousands of people arrive to the shores of Europe and Greece every single day and hope to make a journey north towards countries such as Germany and Austria. And along the way, they pass through Hungary. Unfortunately, under the current system, it's unclear whether or not they will be able to proceed to seek asylum in countries such as Austria and Germany. However, the situation and the scenes that I've seen here in Budapest are distressing. There are families and individuals, people from countries such as Afghanistan, Iraq, or Syria, that simply want to find safety and security for their families in countries where they can see a future. The situation in these train stations is extremely difficult. There is a lack of sanitation for the people that are there. There isn't enough food available for them. A train station is simply not set up to be able to host a large population of people. It's simply not designed for that. The authorities themselves are frustrated and challenged in how they can manage this population movement because there is a lack of clarity in how to manage this on a continental level. It's required that EU nations, whether they're affected directly by population movements or not, come to a common agreement in how to manage this significant humanitarian challenge.
I know that the Red Cross is working as hard as it can. What about other NGOs? How are these people getting fed? Where do they go to the bathroom? How do they get taken care of medically? Give me an idea as to the team effort between you and other NGOs and other entities to try to attend to these people.
Well, the resources that the Red Cross has to hand, just like all other organizations, are limited. And in responding to an emergency such as this, it's required that we provide assistance across all of the countries affected by this population movement. Right from Greece, where we've just launched an emergency appeal for some 3 million Swiss francs to be able to assist people on arrival, through into the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, where the Red Cross provides assistance at entry and exit points, on into Serbia, on into Hungary, on into Austria and Germany. The Red Cross is there. However, particularly here in Hungary, it's members of the public and local NGOs who are also providing assistance to these people who are in the train stations. These are spontaneous groups of people who see the plight of these people, who see that they have many of them have little resources and that they're in need of assistance, and have come forward spontaneously and formed groups to provide some basic food items and to assist people in any way that they can. However, the numbers are simply too difficult to be able to provide assistance for all those that need it. It's very hard for these people to maintain dignity when all that they want to do is find a safe and secure future for their families and for their children. So the situation is extremely difficult.
Stephen Ryan, he's the spokesperson for the International Federation of the Red Cross in Budapest. Gaining weight in midlife is unhealthy for a number of reasons, including increasing the risk of high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. Now, a new study concludes that obesity in middle age may also cause people to develop Alzheimer's disease symptoms at a younger age. We hear more from VOA's Jessica Berman.
Alzheimer's disease affects an estimated 35 million elderly people around the world, and that number is expected to jump to nearly double in 20 years. The neurodegenerative disorder causes severe memory loss, disability, and death. Previous studies have linked it to obesity, although the reasons are still unclear. A new study has found that those who are obese in midlife are at greater risk of developing Alzheimer's at a younger age than they would have otherwise. Researchers followed almost 1,400 cognitively normal individuals for about 14 years. Of these, 142 eventually developed Alzheimer's disease. U.S. Institute on Aging neurologist Madhav Thambasetti is lead author of the study, which used a calculation of obesity called the body mass index to compare with the age of onset of Alzheimer's.
We find that for every unit increase in body mass index at age 50 years, the age at which the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease appears to decrease by almost 6.5 months.
In the study, the average age of Alzheimer's onset was 83, but symptoms began almost 7 months earlier for each unit above a normal BMI of 25. In other words, a person with a BMI of 27 was more likely to show symptoms of Alzheimer's almost 14 months earlier at the age of 82, while someone with a BMI of 32 might start to show signs at 79, 4 years younger than average. Thombasetti and colleagues saw a trend in Alzheimer's development among obese individuals. It is important to note that not all the overweight participants developed Alzheimer's. Researchers conducting autopsy and imaging studies on those who died of Alzheimer's disease noted the higher the BMI, the more plaques and tangles they saw in their brains. Plaques and tangles are the hallmarks of the disease. The study was published in the Nature journal Molecular Psychiatry. Thombasetti says there is a take-home message.
Maintaining a healthy body mass index, even as early as in midlife, may have long-lasting protective effects in delaying the onset of Alzheimer's disease even decades later.
The authors write that intervention in the form of weight management could potentially delay the worldwide prevalence of the disease by 22 million people by the year 2050. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hip-hop fashion is now a part of mainstream culture, but there was a time when hip-hop was just breaking into its own identity, not only musically, but also in fashion. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about a new documentary that looks at the time, Fresh Dressed.
It documents the evolution of what we consider to be hip-hop fashion, hip-hop dress, as a form of individual creative expression to what is now, quite honestly, close to a $1 billion industry.
And some of this emerged in New York, particularly when you had street gangs that were, instead of fighting one another, they were doing raps, and they would spray paint their clothes and do this kind of stuff in wild kind of graffiti designs in order to distinguish themselves from other people.
Right. It was part of the B-boy culture. And the documentary really goes into not only the different gangs, but so interesting, it goes into how the different boroughs in New York City expressed themselves and how they dressed. And there are a number of people who were interviewed who said, you know, sometimes you could go to the Apollo and you'd look at one guy and go, oh, he's from the Bronx or he's from Brooklyn or he's from Harlem. Each borough had its own way or its own form of expression. And then eventually all that came together as hip hop, the music, started to become more popular. And then everyone from around the country started to pick up on those cues. And, you know, you had girls like me in Detroit wearing big bangle earrings because Salt and Pepper, my favorite hip hop group, was wearing them at the time.
And the expression fresh dressed refers to being you know, fresh out of the box.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm clean.
I'm clean and I'm fresh. Mm-hmm. And I have new Adidas shoes that, you know, they had the big starched laces and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this really has influenced a lot of top designers, because you had people like Givenchy and Yves Saint Laurent, everybody picking up on this trend and incorporating it into their designs for high fashion houses.
Yeah, and this is nothing new. I think all subcultures will eventually influence mainstream culture. I mean, we saw it, of course, with hip hop, and we're now almost 40 years into that. But, you know, even when we talked about grunge, remember back in the early 90s, grunge was influencing what Marc Jacobs and a lot of the bigger designers were doing. So this is just a natural progression. But I think Fresh Dressed is really fun because I don't know that too many people realize where it all began and what it actually looked like. As those who were in the culture started to make more money and become more affluent, then the dress started to change. So yeah, so you had Diddy and Russell Simmons coming out with suits and things that normally weren't associated with the culture, but now are.
All right, the film is called Fresh Dressed. And if you have any comments, please send us a tweet. Shauna, you can tweet her directly. She's at VOA Lady DJ. You can also hit her up at VOA underscore music. Be sure to listen for her in the Soul Lounge. You can find that at our website, voanews.com.
Fresh dressed like a million bucks. Threw on the ballet shoes and the fly green socks. Stepped out the house, stopped short. Oh, no, I went back in. Forgot the, then I dally, ran through a alley, bumped into my old girl, Sally, from the valley. This is a girl plays hard to get, so I said.
You've been listening to International Edition, and of course you can always find us at voanews.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter. You can even email us, voaasia@voanews.com. As for Twitter, follow us on our handle, VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and we thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, that is, Zineb Abdelrahman. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, and we hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Award-winning journalist and contributor to Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Hadija Ismailova, has been sentenced by an Azerbaijani court to 7.5 years in prison for alleged tax evasion, illegal business activity, embezzlement, and abuse of power. At the close of the trial, Ms. Ismailova told the court, "It is not a coincidence that these charges were brought against me. After all, I have talked and written in detail about these very same crimes myself." The United States is deeply troubled by the sentencing of Hadija Ismailova. The U.S. is further concerned by reports of irregularities during the investigation and trial, including the apparent exclusion of witness testimony and other key evidence. This case is another example in a broad pattern of increasing restrictions on human rights in Azerbaijan, including curtailing the freedom of the press. As Azerbaijan President Ilham Aliyev himself recently noted, freedom of the mass media is an integral part of democratic principles, and its violation is contrary to the interests of Azerbaijan. U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner urged the government of Azerbaijan to release Ms. Ismailova and others incarcerated in connection with exercising their fundamental freedoms. The U.S. also calls on the government of Azerbaijan to adhere to its international obligations to protect and promote human rights and fundamental freedoms of all of its citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.